Good evening, everybody. This is Rich Wilson, and welcome to this very special Sunday night broadcast. I am solo this evening. I'm actually recording this ahead of time on Saturday, actually Friday evening, late Friday evening, as I get ready to head off to Asia, heading off just to India this time, and unfortunately we'll be in the air and in transit on our Sunday night scheduled show. So this should still publish on Sunday evening, so I hope you guys enjoy the show. The schedule then will be this coming Thursday. Tim and I will get together and record a show, kind of a midweek show as well. So expect this show to run 30 to 40 minutes and the show on Thursday to run 30 to 40 minutes. And hopefully together we'll get you fixed up with your fantasy fix. This will be a slightly different show than what we typically would do on Sunday evening, where we're doing heavy fantasy in terms of who to pick up, waiver wire pickups, two start pitchers, etc. It's going to be a little bit more kid focused, but it's going to be kid focused as we're going to talk primarily. The big segment will be about the top 10 prospects that I think are about ready to come up and can make a difference to your fantasy team in the second half of the year, or really, let's call it late June and onward. So hopefully you'll get some value out of that. And then we're also going to answer some listener questions that are going to be heavy prospect focus. And then we'll finish up with a little bit of talk about the draft coming up on Monday, which will be tomorrow if all this stuff happens correctly. If you want to get a hold of us, the best way to do that is on the Twitter at Rich Wilson FSG, at Rich Wilson FSG. And of course, you can get the great Tim McLeod at Timothy LMC, at Timothy LMC. If you want to go out to our Facebook group, I think it's a page now, so I don't know if you've got to actually knock on the door to let you in anymore. The great Alan Servinus runs that. It is prospect361.com, Dynasty League Groups, and just join in. There's tons and tons of fantasy talk. It's, I would say, about 60% fantasy talk and 40% Dynasty League talk. So, you know, that's usually about the split, but there's something in there for everybody. We'd appreciate if you go out and rate and review us on iTunes. We've been a little light on that for a while, so I'd appreciate anybody going out and doing that. Before we get started, we want to go to our wonderful sponsor, FanDuel. FanDuel is changing the way people play fantasy sports. Sign up now to play one-day fantasy baseball at FanDuel.com. Pick a brand new team any day you want. The entry fee starts for as little as a dollar. There's a league for everyone. No season-long commitments, no sign-up fees. Play anytime, any day you want, all summer long. Stop waiting 6 months to try to win a league. Play today, win tonight. I played three times this week. Actually, I won. I played a bunch of different games, so a lot of head-to-head, just $5 games, going one-on-one with people, and still, you know, still trying to get my feet wet. I have yet to win any of the big contests yet, but I am winning a lot of the head-to-head, and I got to tell you, it's a complete rush. And it really, it's a different kind of game. You got to nail your pitcher. It's a lot about power, total bases. So it really makes you think. You've got to look at right-lefty matchups. You've got to take a look at weather conditions. And you're not putting a guy out there for a week and hoping you get a good week out of him. You're actually putting him out for a day and hoping you get a good day out of the person. But anyway, don't wait until football season to get your fantasy fix. Get it on the action tonight. Last week, Charles G. from Philly turned $10 into over $25,000 in one night on FanDuel. FanDuel is home to more winners than any other daily fantasy site. Join the over 1 million people who have already won cash. Go to FanDuel and click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner. Use my code P361 and sign up today. There's a special offer for new users. Every dollar you deposit, FanDuel will match it up to $200 that gets earned as you play. That's a bonus of up to $200. Offer is only good for the first 50 people that use the code P361. Don't forget to use my code, again, P361. You got the code P361? Got it. FanDuel.com, where every day is a new season. That's FANDUEL.com. Sign up today. And again, we've been doing this now. I think this is the 10th week been doing it. So FanDuel is really happy. We're really happy with the relationship. We really appreciate everybody going out, using our code, and hopefully you're having fun. A different kind of game. It's not for everybody, but it is a different game than traditional fantasy baseball. And I encourage everybody at least to give it a shot. I'm afraid you might get yourself hooked, though. So if you don't want to get hooked on something, don't try it. But, you know, I got to tell you, you're going to have a blast. So go give it a shot and let me know how you do. Guys, it's you know, first, the only big news I really want to talk about is, and we mentioned it a couple of days ago, it just seems like yesterday that was on the air, Joey Gallo coming up. And I got to tell you, it is fascinating. We're most of the way through the game this evening. He's 0 for 3 with 3 strikeouts. And if I go over to his baseball reference, he is before today's game, he had 14 plate appearances, 12 at-bats, so he walked twice. Of course, he's had the two gigantic home runs, 5 RBIs. You like that. But 6 strikeouts. So you throw in the 0 for 3 and 3 more strikeouts tonight. That's 9 strikeouts. And if my math is any good, that's 12 plus 2, 14 coming into today, and 3 more, 17. That's 9 strikeouts in 17 at-bats. That is a strikeout rate. Let me bring up a little calculator here, which I ran earlier. That's a 53% strikeout rate. Now, again, tiny, tiny sample size. But I joke last year, or maybe the beginning of this year, if Joey Gallo came up, there'd be a good chance he would come up the bat 50 times, strike out 45 times, and hit 5 home runs. Obviously, that's not going to be the case, but I wouldn't be surprised in those 50 times at bat, he strikes out 35 times, hits 5 home runs, walks 10 times, and whatever the rest of the math comes out to be, you know, some outs here and there. That's the kind of player he is today. He is a huge swing and miss. He's got a huge swing. He's 6'5". He's going to be up for 2 weeks. I do not believe that they're going to keep him up any longer. Now, of course, if he goes crazy this weekend and hits 3 home runs, he's a little overmatched by lefties. Carlos Rodon had his number a little bit. Chris Sale, he had no chance against, but he hit Jeff Samardzija pretty well. But remember, as opposed to the minor leagues, there are multiple videotapes about this now that are being run. People are analyzing his swing. They're going to find the holes, and if anybody's got any command, pitchers have any command, they're going to expose young Joey Gallo. I know, particularly in the NFBC and other leagues, people are going to go out and put a fortune down on Joey Gallo. It's not going to be me. I'm not going to put a lot of money down for Joey Gallo on Fab. I'm going to put my money down on somebody else. I'm going to put a buck down on somebody else that we're going to get to a little bit later. That might surprise you, and I think it's a similar player as Joey Gallo, and I think a guy that yeah, that might actually come up and do something. A lot of things have to fall his way to come up and do something, but I think he just might, and we're going to get to that in a few minutes. I think that's what they call in the business a tease. So listen on for that. Let's go to kind of what the main topic of tonight's episode is all about, and this will be coming out on my site, prospect361.com, tomorrow, Saturday, I think at 6 a.m. in the morning. It'll be posted out there, and it's really the next 10 prospects that I expect to come up and actually be able to contribute. Some of these names you're going to know, and you're going to go, oh, these are already taken, but hopefully a couple of them might be guys that are out there on the waiver wire that you might actually go out and grab. The first one, obviously, is Carlos Correa, a shortstop with the Houston Astros. We've talked about him ad nauseum. He's had a bit of a rough go in AAA. It has not been the cakewalk that I think all of us thought it would be. It's an adjustment. He's going to get adjusted. And I got to tell you, the Astros, though they lost this evening 6-0, or were losing 6-0, they're still in it. But, man, they strike out a ton. And Carlos Correa is going to make a lot better contact. And putting he and Jose Altuve at the top of the lineup, to me, makes a ton of sense. I do like George Springer hitting number one. He's not a leadoff hitter, but he does get on base okay because he walks a lot. But, man, I think I'd rather go back to Jose Altuve in the number one hole, followed by Carlos Correa, and then you bring up some of those big boppers who are going to strike out a ton, but that's who the Astros team is. I know he's taken everywhere. just be patient. I think he'll be up by the end of June. It could be the early July, but they're going to surely let that Super 2 pass now. I know in an interview with Jeff Luhnow, he said, hey, a lot can happen with the next collective bargaining agreement. We don't know what's going to happen, but, you know, what is it, June 5th, 6th now? He's got to wait another 14 days, and he should be home free in terms of passing that Super 2 status. So if you're close enough now, you should just let him ride out. Hector Oliveira is the next guy. He finally, after it seems like he was signed months ago by the Dodgers and really had trouble getting his visa, he was signed out of Cuba for, what, $62.5 million over 6 years. He finally has a box score. He was 1-for-4 last night in his first professional appearance in the U.S. He's 30 years old, guys, so he's, as soon as he knocks off the rust, let's call it 2, 3, 4 weeks tops, he's going to be up. The question is, where does he play? Justin Turner's been okay at third base. Clearly, Howard Kendrick is sitting at second base. He's a little banged up. They got Alex Guerrero, who's actually played pretty well. I know he's playing a little bit in the outfield. They're going to find a room for Hector Oliveira. So, and I think, to me, I think the odd man out will be Justin Turner. Let's face it, Justin Turner is not all that good. I know he's had a nice start to the season, but I think he'll be the odd man out because they're going to put this guy in there. And I think he's got a really decent hit tool. I think he'll hit with a little bit of pop. So let's say he gets 300 at-bats. I think you could see 6 to 8 home runs. I think you're going to see 15-plus stolen bases and a decent batting average. I think he'll make that team better. He's not a great defender, but I think they've got to find a place for him. I don't know if he can play the outfield, so that's a possibility as well. But I also wrote in the article, don't be surprised if the Dodgers, still needing pitching, and if you think Bolsinger is the answer, he's not. They could move a Howie Kendrick. They could move a Justin Turner. And because they got Alex Guerrero and they've got they got Hector Oliveira who can backfill into those positions and try to bring in some pitching help. So don't be surprised if you see the Dodgers do that here over the next 6 weeks as we get into the trade deadline. I'm not sure that's not such a horrible idea. Third guy, and these are all in order, Steven Matz. There was somebody tweeted out to me earlier this evening, or actually earlier today. And let me read this to you because it's like, no, stop. Don't do this. Walk away from the computer. Should I continue rostering Steven Matz or drop him for Trevor May? Thanks so much and keep up the great podcast work. I appreciate that, Steve Larson. And I appreciate you having a simple name that I can pronounce. as you guys know, I screwed up Mark Reynolds' name on last Sunday's podcast, called him Matt Reynolds. And then, of course, right after I corrected myself, Wednesday, I then said Vidal Sassoon just to make a joke, and Hoppy finally caught it and actually tweeted back at him. He said, well done there, Hoppy. But anyway, Steve, and I tweeted back out to him. I got to tell you, you don't want to get rid of Steven Matz. I think he is a Super 2 guy that they're just waiting on that time to pass. Let's face it, they're going to go with a six-man rotation for a period of time off and on. And if you think Dylan G is the answer, he's not. I think Steven Matz is going to provide more production. The Mets don't have a chance to make the playoffs. I think realistic chance to make the playoffs, but they have a chance to do a lot better this year. And I think they're trying to do that to keep the fans interested and be living in the New York market. I mean, the fans are excited about the Mets. And I think having Thor, Harvey, Matz as your 1-2-3 this year, and then coming back with Zach Wheeler next year. I mean, the future is extremely bright for the Mets. I've also mentioned Steven Matz could be used as trade bait. I still believe that. But I do think he's going to come up and either help the Mets later on this year, probably sometime in early July, or he's going to help some other team. It's a lefty with really good stuff. He's not Noah Syndergaard. But he has handled AAA very well. And if you've never gone to see a game in Las Vegas, and it's an extremely difficult place to play, and he's handled that remarkably well. So to me, you got to give the guy kudos for that. So I'm pretty impressed with Steven Matz and what he's done. He should be owned in all leagues. You just got to be patient with him. The fourth guy is my wild card here, and this is the guy I'm telling everybody to pick up instead of Joey Gallo, and that is Javier Baez. Now, Javier Baez is not technically still a prospect. He has 213 at-bats, I believe. So usually the cutoff for prospect, being called a prospect, is still having rookie eligibility, and that cuts off at 130 at-bats, I believe, for positional players. I think it's 50 innings for, or some other kind of combination for relief pitchers, but 50 innings and 130 plate appearance or at-bats for positional players. I can't recall which one. So he's not rookie eligible anymore. But let's face it, he's playing a lot better this year. He's walking a little bit. I mean, has he changed his approach? I don't know. But what I do know is if he gets 300 at-bats, he's going to hit you 15 home runs, flat out going to do that. He's also going to steal you 5 to 8 stolen bases. He might bat 230, but, you know, if you can live with the batting average, there's home runs there, and I think he's going to get called up. Joey Gallo is going to have a much lower batting average than that. Probably going to have the same similar home runs if he stays up, but the fact is he's not going to stay up. Now, the question is, where does Javier Baez play? Well, if he continues to rake, which all indications are he will, and if he does, I think you see Chris Bryant move to the outfield. I watched a ton of games with Chris Bryant. I just love watching that team. I mean, he is athletic, but man, he has to bend down a long way to get that ball, and it's not working. He's not an average major league third baseman. He's below average, and the Cubs have a very poor infield to begin with. I mean, Javier Baez is no, you know, it's not going to make anybody forget Brooks Robinson, but he's better. He's going to be better than Chris Bryant at third base. So I think Javier Baez moves to third base. I think Chris Bryant moves to left field, and you've got your star-studded team there. I mean, you got a legitimate young player at nearly every position. Jorge Soler, Dexter Fowler in center field, Chris Bryant in left, Anthony Rizzo at first base, Addison Russell at second. You got Starling Castro, and then, of course, Javier Baez. Average age is probably about 23, 24 years old. And a team that could probably compete at least for a wild card or for a 500 team this year. So, I mean, you're thinking, get this team together, get them to start really gelling, start to play together as a team, add a bunch of free agents next year, and the Cubs are going to be extraordinarily dangerous in 2016 and 17. So, bring him up, let's get this game on the road, and let's move Chris Bryant out to the outfield, because that's ultimately where he's going to be. So that's my suggestion to pick up instead of Joey Gallo. Most of you will bid on Joey Gallo because you want to have a guy that can hit 500-foot home runs. Get it. Javier Baez can hit 480-foot home runs, by the way. So there is a difference in terms of raw power between the two. Joey Gallo has 80-grade raw, no question about it. Giancarlo Stanton-esque power. Javier Baez has 70 raw. So this is going to be massive home runs by Javier Baez. Matt Wisler, right-handed pitcher with the Atlanta Braves. I write that Matt Wisler does not get much love in prospect circles. And I don't know why. He came over in one of the many trades that the Padres did with the Atlanta Braves this offseason. And I've always liked Matt Wisler a lot. I mean, his stuff is pretty good, but the fact is he's really a polished pitcher. And he's done quite well this year. I think you can expect if he comes up, you know, 80 to 100 innings, high 3 ERA, and, you know, probably 7 strikeouts per 9. He's not going to walk anybody, so that ERA might be a little high that I have there. Maybe it could be 350 to 380. I think he can really play. So if you're in a deeper league, go out and roster Matt Wisler, right? Because I think he can help your team, and I think he'll be up. Again, he's having a pretty good year. The next guy is Luis Severino. He got with the Yankees. He got promoted to AAA last week, and I've seen Luis Severino pitch 4 times, I believe. I think he's a reliever. The mechanics aren't very good. It's a really army delivery. Doesn't use his lower half very well. He's got phenomenal stuff, though. It's interesting. He's a plus fastball and a plus changeup. The slider slurvy kind of pitch is emerging. It's a pretty good pitch. And once he has that pitch, it's going to be 3 really dangerous weapons. The problem is the delivery really screams bullpen. And long-term, he might be in the bullpen. But if he hits the bullpen, I'm telling you, that fastball is going to hit 98, 99 miles an hour with that wicked changeup. He could get a strikeout and a half an inning, that kind of thing. He could be Dylan Patantis, and that might be the kind of player we're looking at. Where do the Yankees put him, in the bullpen or as a starter? I don't know. But to me, he should be owned in a deeper fantasy league, because he's either going to get you a lot of strikeouts as a bullpen arm, and I think be extremely difficult to hit, or he could be a pretty decent starting pitcher. I know it's in Yankee Stadium. He does keep the ball down a little bit, so he's not going to be too home run prone. He should be a guy, again, with Matt Wisler, two guys that I think you should be thinking about rostering now, because let's face it, the Yankees are going to get hurt. They always get hurt. They're an older team. Their pitching staff's a little bit younger. Ivan Nova is going to come back here in the next 3 or 4 weeks. Might be a guy that you should think about rostering. But I think Luis Severino is going to be a weapon that the Yankees need to bring up. The next guy is maybe another a little bit of a surprise. And for those of you who have read my stuff for a long time and have listened to this podcast for a long time, know that I have unnatural love for Vincent Velasquez. So, or Vincent Velasquez, I can't even say his name now, Velasquez. So right-handed pitcher with the Houston Astros. Let's face it, the Astros probably don't deserve to be in first place. With that crazy lineup of all the swing and miss that we talked about earlier in this segment, but they're not being bashful about trying to finish over 500, about trying to to be competitive this year and sneak into a playoff situation. And I got to tell you, if they sneak into a playoff situation with Dallas Keuchel as your number one and maybe Lance McCullers or Colin McHugh number two, that's a they're going to be a little dangerous, particularly with Dallas Keuchel. You know, in a best of five series, he's pitching two of the games. That could be an ugly situation to go after. But Vincent Velasquez, I like a lot. I saw him in the Arizona Fall League. I saw him out in Lancaster. He was a better pitcher than Lance McCullers. He was a better pitcher than Mark Appel. He has really, really nasty stuff and a beautiful, beautiful slider, fastball kind of combination. His biggest bugaboo is that he's never been able to stay healthy. He's pitched five games since coming back, I think, with a lat strain or some kind of typical injury that he gets. 26 and a third innings, 37 strikeouts. That's not a misprint. You didn't mishear that. 26 and a third innings, 37 strikeouts. He's only walked 9. That's a 1.37 ERA. The guy can pitch, and they went down and they got Lance McCullers, Brett Oberholton. He's not the answer. Scott Feldman's a little banged up now. I think he could be a guy that they go down, they reach down and get. I think he's just about ready. I mean, if Lance McCullers was ready, surely Vincent Velasquez is ready. Might be a guy that I would be going out there and rostering. I had heard and I had read that heard inside kind of information, not stuff that you would publish, but like tweets going around and so forth, that it was between Brett Oberholzer and Vincent Velasquez to get that start. And they went with B.O. and it didn't work out. So, well, it actually worked out okay. He pitched okay. But he's in the discussion now of a guy that they want to bring up. The next two guys are pretty interesting people, and a lot of people have been asking about this gentleman, Miguel Sano. Will he come up? I'm not exactly sure, but quite frankly, if the Texas Rangers can bring up Joey Gallo, then I could tell you the Minnesota Twins can sure as heck bring up Miguel Sano. They are going to be very, very similar players. Tons of home runs, tons of raw, tons of strikeouts. I do think Miguel Sano will strike out slightly less than Joey Gallo. I think he's a little bit more hand-eye coordination than Joey Gallo. And that's not just this on Joey Gallo. It's just more to Miguel Sano has a slightly better long-term hit tool, in my opinion. But the question is, there is no room at the end for him, and Trevor Plouffe is playing okay. I don't believe in the Minnesota Twins. I know there's a lot of Minnesota Twins fans that listen to the show, and I apologize. I'm sorry. I just don't yet believe in them. If you take a look, that pitching staff, the run differential with the team, there's a lot of red flags out there. And if they hit a June swoon, which could very well happen, they could move a Trevor Plouffe and bring up a Miguel Sano. Why not? They can move Miguel Sano potentially to the outfield, put him in right field. I guess that's where Torii Hunter is. But there's a chance that they're going to find a room for Miguel Sano, because he and Byron Buxton are the future of this organization. And I think it's time to bring up Miguel Sano sometime this year. And if he does, it's going to be a ton of home runs. I mean, a ton of swing and miss, but a ton of home runs. And power is at a premium. So nobody owns this guy in a redraft league. So I wouldn't be picking him up this evening, but I would be continuing to watch the box scores of him and continue to watch the box scores of the Minnesota Twins. And if you see that June Swoon hit, then I would consider picking him up, because I think there's something there. Last guy is I'm not really sure about, but he has pitched a lot better, and that's Jonathan Gray with the Colorado Rockies. Yeah, it's Colorado Rockies. The first month was ugly. He posted a 10.7 ERA, and it was like, holy crap, look at this guy. He's in Albuquerque, which is probably the worst place to pitch in all of baseball. It's a very, very pitcher-friendly situation. High altitude, dry, the balls fly out, the ground is really hard, and he really did not pitch well at all, clearly. He's pitched better of late since then in the month of May, and I think one start in June, 2.77 ERA. But the strikeouts aren't there, only 6.41 and 53 in the third innings. But he has been working on his secondary pitches and really not coming with that fastball-slider combination to strike out a lot of guys. I've heard this. I have not seen him pitching out in the PCL, but I've heard this directly from people who have. And the people I still hear is the stuff is a little degraded from when he was in college, but it's still very, very good. He is a bit of a fly ball pitcher, but I think those strikeouts are going to be once he hits Colorado. Would I be running to pick him up? No, but I do want to throw this out as a guy that if he does come up and starts pitching well, it's a guy that you probably should roster, because, again, it's going to be strikeouts. He does pitch in Colorado, but he does pitch a lot of games in San Diego and San Francisco and, so there's opportunities in other places as well. So those are my top 10. A little bit different than maybe you would see in some other lists that might be coming out about people who are about ready to come up. I'm trying to go a little bit deeper and, kind of skip over some of these, some of the more obvious guys that might be out there. But, the Miguel Sanos and the Javier Baez's and Matt Wisler's and Vince Velasquez are guys that I think other people might not be talking about. And, hey, go out and do it. I was right on E-Rod, so got to give me a little bit of love there for Eduardo Rodriguez. So I'm trying to help you guys out come July 1st when these guys, you might see some of these guys come up. Or if, it comes August and you hear these names rumbling around, you'll remember hopefully this podcast and go, well, I think Wilson talked about that. You'll go back and rewind and listen to it and say, that Vincent Velasquez, maybe is a guy I want to go out and bring on. Jonathan Singleton, another guy that might be out there. I don't think so. Also, Domingo Santana is actually playing really well with the Houston Astros. Another two guys that are there. Another Astro guy is Mark Appel. I don't know if I'd be rostering, even thinking about any three of those guys yet. It'd be interesting to see what they do. I could see Jonathan Singleton going in a trade somewhere because he signed that crazy contract, so he is locked down for a number of years. Team control, which the Astros probably want to hold on to that, but that makes him extremely valuable trade chip. Really cheap guy for probably 4 or 5 years, and with all that raw, it might be a nice little trade bait for the Houston Astros as they go after potentially a Cole Hamels or somebody like that. So, or they might raid the Cincinnati Reds and bring in some players. I do think the Houston Astros will do something. So that's our main segment. I do want to close off with kind of a handful of listener questions. And one of the questions talks about the draft that's coming up this Monday, which unfortunately I will not be live at, nor will I be watching it on television. So I'll be trying to catch it while I'm sitting in India on my laptop. Let's see. So that starts at 8 o'clock. So I think it's – so that'll be 8 o'clock. So that'll be like 4 o'clock in the morning or something like that, or 5 o'clock in the morning that I'll be watching that. So that's going to go well. all right, let's get to some of these questions. These are some prospect questions primarily, and then we'll get into some draft talk here at the end. Andrew McKeeston, apologize if I butchered your name. When will Kyle Schwarber be up, and what type of player do you see him becoming in the major leagues? That dude can really hit, Andrew. And, you know, it's complicated. It's, you know, we've already talked about Javier Baez, and if he goes to third and Chris Bryant goes to left, and you know, Dexter Fowler's a pretty good center fielder. I mean, where the heck does Kyle Schwarber go? I mean, I know they're bringing up him as a catcher, but I still haven't met many people that think he's going to be a catcher. So and they've got a pretty good catcher with Miguel Montero. Is it Miguel Montero their catcher? I can't even remember. I should put this thing on pause while I go take a look who the catcher for the Chicago Cubs is. Let me see if I can reach over here real quickly. It's either Russell Martin or Miguel Montero. I think it's Miguel Montero because then they trade him from the Arizona Diamondbacks. So let me take a look at the Cubs. And it is Miguel Montero. So apologize for not having that off the tip of my tongue, and I won't even go back and edit everything. So I don't know where Kyle Schwarber comes up, but the guy can hit, and he's going to be a fantasy monster. I don't care if he plays in the outfield. The Cubs are going to find a place for him. I don't think he would be trade bait. I still think there's going to be some interesting off-season moves by the Chicago Cubs because they still got Albert Almora that's out there, who's an okay player, but really good defensive player. Billy McKinney's down there. And Kyle Schwarber. So they got some guys in the outfield that can flat out play, and who knows what they're going to do. So that's going to be a stacked team. Alex Foles right in. What's the projection comp for Ketel Marte? When can we expect him up? Well, you know, the Mariners keep trying to find a shortstop. I mean, they've gone through Chris Taylor, and I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and Brad Miller. And, I mean, I think Chris Taylor just got demoted. Brad Miller's playing shortstop. Again, Brad Miller's not that good. I mean, Ketel Marte is a much better defender than any one of those guys. The problem is he broke his thumb, so he's out for a while. So I don't see that being an option, at least until August. He might get a September call-up. So he's off the books for this year. What kind of player is he? Think of a poor man's Orlando Arcia, who I like a lot, as you guys know. He could hit, got a little bit of speed, no power. So Arcia's got a little bit more power than him, a little bit more speed, a little bit better defensively. So he's a little bit better than Ketel Marte. But that could be the guy who actually winds up finally being the shortstop of the future, quote-unquote future, for your Seattle Mariners. Brian Rigney says, chances that Holtzen finds his way to the bigs this year. And so that's Danny Holtzen, who plays with the Seattle Mariners. Second or third overall pick in the 2011 draft. And remember that 2011 draft had, you know, a who's who in it. That was the Gerrit Cole draft. And the Seattle Mariners went with him above Anthony Rendon and a lot of other guys, which, you know, was crazy. And Danny Holtzen, unfortunately, blew out a shoulder and never made it to the majors, and I'm not sure he's ever going to make it. So I have no idea. I mean, it's all going to be about health when he comes up. I think he's a back of the rotation guy. He's a lefty, so you always like that. He's going to play in a good ballpark, but I have no idea when he's going to come up. I just hope he gets healthy and eventually has some semblance of a major league career, but I don't know. It might not happen. It's just one of those guys that could have, should have, and got hurt, and it does happen. John Brown, what is the outlook for Jesus Montero and Rob Refsnyder? Well, everybody remembers the hype around Jesus Montero. Lost a lot of weight in the spring. I think it was real. We all saw the pictures. And he's been better this year. 7 home runs, a .310 batting average. However, the approach still is, I think, very, very aggressive, and it's not a good approach. And he'll move to first base. And I know Timmy was talking about picking him up. I just don't see him coming up anytime soon. I mean, and if he does, I think that approach is going to really limit him. And when I say approach, you know, what typically you're talking about, if you're taking a look at a guy that's got a 3 or 4% walk rate, that's a really over-aggressive approach. And that's, unless you can make Jose Altuve type of contact, I mean, that's a really tough profile of a player. You want a guy, I mean, obviously you want a guy who makes really great contact and has really good plate discipline and a good approach. You don't want somebody up there hacking at everything, but you also want the player to be aggressive. You don't want him sitting there and being passive, a la Jackie Bradley Jr. last year, if you recall that. He would sit there, strike one, strike two, and he's dead. So somewhere in the middle, and that getting that approach right, having enough aggressiveness to put the pitcher on his heels, to know that you're not going to sit there and take strike one and strike two, that you're going to be more aggressive, but that you're not hacking at everything. And Jose Montero's got to learn to not hack at everything. Rob Refsnyder, that guy can hit. I mean, but he's just an okay baseball player. was on a ton last year in Double A, and I think I'm going out to Scranton-Wilkes-Barre at the end of this week. So I get back from India, leave Saturday morning, get back from India on Thursday, 6 a.m. or something crazy like that. You imagine my life. I mean, it's just, I'm going to fly like 24 hours to get there, be there for 3 days, and then turn around and come back. And I'm not even know which way is up by the time I get back. But anyway, I am going out to see, I believe it's next weekend, to see some games. I'll get a chance to re-see Rob Refsnyder. I think he's a trade bait. I think he's a second division kind of starter there at second base or the outfield. Not a lot of power, not a lot of speed, but the guy can hit. So that's my thoughts on that. I can't imagine the Yankees promoting a guy like that and having him play on a team that costs $200 million. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Matt Coleman writes, Jesse Winker is having a rough start to the season. What do you attribute this to? Any concerns? And yeah, I guess my comment to you, Matt, is it sounds stupid, but baseball is really hard. But the approach is still there. He's still getting on base a lot. Still got the contact. I mean, if I took a look at his BABIP, my guess is BABIP's really low. Just give him time. I thought he was going to be up this year. I almost included him in my prospects that could come up and make a difference. I still think the kid can really, really play. I've seen him play in the Arizona Fall League a lot, and he really was good last year. He's just stumbled a little bit and low BABIP, and I think he's going to recover. I think he'll be just fine. And keep an eye on him, guys. And, you know, if he starts raking here over the next 4 or 5, 6 weeks, the Cincinnati Reds are going to somewhat dismantle their team. And I say somewhat because if you take a look at the Reds and some other of the small market teams, if they don't have a good team, people don't come to those games. I mean, you can go back and take a look at the history of the attendance. And so they've got to put players out there. Now, they're still going to have Brandon Phillips. They're still going to have Joey Votto. So they're still going to have some good players. But I do think Jesse Winker is a guy that they're going to go forward with. And if it's not at the end of this year, then it's definitely next year. Do not drop him in a dynasty league. And consider him this year for redraft leagues. I mean, I still is a guy that you want to keep an eye on. Rick Contos, is Malik Smith for real, or is his high batting average a product of his speed, poor defense in Double A, and will that adjust at the major league level? I guess, Rick, and I would answer in this kind of context, in general, speed guys, you hope that their ceiling. You hope their ceiling is Ben Revere. Last year's Ben Revere, who had about a 320 batting average, a really high BABIP, so it was kind of fueled by that a little bit. Or even Juan Pierre. Remember Juan Pierre in his prime, Florida Marlins, Dodgers? He was a fifth-round pick, get you 50 stolen bases and score a lot of runs and get on base a lot, and a really, really nice fantasy player. He was never a very good player, though. I mean, he was a lousy defender, and once his speed started to go, he became not a very good baseball player and a terrible fantasy player. But you hope that that is the ceiling of these guys. What happens, though, is most of their ceilings become Craig Gentry and Jarrett Dyson, guys that are speed guys only, can get you 20 stolen bases, but are going to get 250 at-bats and be tough to roster in a anything outside an only league. Where is Malik Smith? I think he's probably closer, quite frankly, to Jarrett Dyson. These guys, though, usually get a chance when they first come up to make hay, and I think that will happen with Malik Smith. I think he'll get a chance to come up and see if he performs. But don't be surprised if you own him in a dynasty league that 3 years from now he is Eric Young Jr., Craig Gentry, those types of player. The one guy I like better than Malik Smith, who's also a speedster, 80 grade speed, is Roman Quinn. Roman Quinn can play, switch hitter, like that better, same level of speed, got a potential to steal you 50 plus bases, a pretty good defender, getting better, really athletic. The guy's got a little bit more pop, he's got a little bit more strength than some of these speed only guys. So I could see Roman Quinn, a guy that top of the lineup with the Phillies. I think they will move Ben Revere, and Roman Quinn will be that top of the lineup guy. Is it this year? Probably not. You could see him in September, but I think next year he'll be your leadoff guy. And I think there's a chance to steal a lot of bases and pop 3 or 4 or 5 home runs. And you go, well, gee, that's not a whole lot of home runs, but that's shown a little bit of strength. Ben Revere gets you one home run a year. So those are my thoughts just about speed guys and Malik Smith in particular. Cody Taylor, what shortstop prospect after Correa has the highest upside? Which one projects to be the safest for fantasy purposes? So I think after Correa, I think it's Corey Seager. Now, that assumes Corey Seager stays at shortstop. I think he will. You'll notice that Corey Seager wasn't on my list of guys who might come up. I'd love to see him come up. I just don't know where he plays. Unless J-Roll gets injured. Now, if he does, which is always a possibility, you could see him obviously take over for that. He's having a pretty good season now in AAA after a little adjustment period. But if you think about it, what happened to Jock Peterson? He played the entire season in AAA, not except for September. Well, I guess he played the whole year in AAA, then came up for a September call-up. That worked pretty well, didn't it? I would not be surprised if that is the exact same approach they use for Corey Seager. Now, again, Corey Seager started off in AA, but he'll pay 5/6 of the season or something like that in AAA. And then you could see him be your starting shortstop for the Los Angeles Dodgers next year. And he's a better player than Jock Peterson. So you're seeing what Jock Peterson's doing. Doesn't have quite the power, but he's a better hitter. And he's an exciting player. So to me, after Carlos Correa, it is him. The guy I think who has the highest floor is Francisco Lindor. Now, did I talk about Francisco Lindor and the top guys coming out? If I didn't, I apologize. I should have, because I do think he has the highest floor of all of these shortstops. And the reason I say that is he's the best shortstop defender of all of them. And once he comes up, he can hit. He's got a little bit of speed, but that glove is going to keep him in the game. Just like Andrelton Simmons, you're going to see Francisco Lindor, a very similar type of defender. And those guys stay in the league for 15 years. So, and what's that going to happen? Well, he's going to have enough contact. I think he's going to be a number two, leadoff number two type of hitter, probably a logical number two hitter. He's going to score a lot of runs. He's going to steal 25 bases, 20 to 30 bases, let's call it 25, and pop 5 or 6 home runs. That's a really good player. Not a superstar, but that's a really good player. I think that's who he is, and I think it's going to happen pretty quickly. So if he comes up this year, then I think you simply prorate those at-bats, and that's what you have. Robert Mearshack. Now, apparently I butchered Robert's name. I think it's Mearshack. If I butchered your name again, Robert, apologies. Christian Walker was a name everyone thought would make a difference this season, even make the big club out of spring training. What happened? Well, I saw Christian Walker play several times at Bowie last year. I wasn't one of the guys that was saying he was going to come up and make a difference. He has good raw power. I give it a 60 grade raw power. He's got an okay hit tool. I don't know where he plays in Baltimore, particularly with Chris Davis there and playing okay. I mean, Chris Davis is popping some out. I don't see him as a difference maker. I see him at best a second division first baseman. So that would mean at a second tier team. Think of the Milwaukee Brewers as a kind of guy that might get some starts there. And maybe hit 250 with 22 home runs and no stolen base. He has no speed. That's the kind of player he is. Is that a difference maker? No. Is that a guy that you really want at your first base? No. Maybe a corner guy long term, but that's my sense. He's probably a top 20 to 25 first baseman long term. So I'm not sure where you were hearing that. If I said it, I was lying because I don't believe that. John Wood says, of Lucas Giolito and Julio Urias, who have a better career? Well, it's close, but my vote has got to go with Lucas Giolito. And again, I almost said the Redskins. The Washington Nationals started Lucas Giolito in extended spring training. Remember, there's still kid gloves on this guy because he's just 2 years removed from Tommy John surgery. Guy is lighting it up. I mean, he's unhittable. The stuff, he's got 3+ pitches, and the guy can pitch. He's 6'6". He ticks off all the boxes. You can even argue he's already had Tommy John surgery, which is a double-edged sword. It's great that he got out of his way, but if he has it again, boo. It's not a death sentence, but it's not a good... You might get a stay of executional death row, but it's not a good thing to have your second Tommy John surgery. But it looks like he's totally healthy. He could be up next year. I think they're going to finally unleash him next year, and he's going to go quickly. And this guy is a top of the rotation. This guy has ace potential, one of the few guys in the minor league with ace potential. He is the best pitcher in the minor leagues. Having said that, Julio Urias is really good as well. He does get his mechanics a little out of whack from time to time. I've seen enough of him. I saw him in two starts last year. I did see him on his 19th birthday. And every once in a while, he just doesn't get his trailing leg over, and his all that energy gets stuck in his left arm, and it's like, ooh, you kind of flinch when you see that. And you can really see it on the side view when you go over and watch him. So if you're ever out scouting, I like to sit behind home plate with my gun and look at stuff, but I'll usually do that for the first 2 to 3 innings, and then I'll spend an inning watching the pitcher on whatever side so I can see his mechanics. Then I go back to make sure I get the fifth inning because I'm going to see what the velocity is there. And you can never trust in these minor league parks, you can never trust the stadium gun. Those things, they use those probably 15-year-old Jugs guns that can be off 2 or 3 miles an hour either way. And, you know, it's not good. I've seen fastballs that they rate at 84 miles an hour, and I got them at 92. And you get yourself confused as you're watching the stadium gun going, what did I just – did I screw something up? And you realize it's the stadium gun. Anyway, Julio Urias is a really good pitcher. Lefty, playing in the right league. There's a lot – well, I guess Lucas Giolito plays in the right league, but – out in those pitcher ballparks, he's going to be really, really good. But if you're asking me who do I think better, I think it's Lucas Giolito. Slightly better stuff, but Julio Urias is really good. Scott Wingfield asks, who are the fantasy top targets in Monday's MLB draft? So this will kind of close with this, though I've got a few more questions after this, but I just can't get to them all. I should have brought some water in here. I didn't bring any water in, so... So if I start hacking, then I guess I can pause this thing because I'm recording on GarageBand, so it's not over Blog Talk Radio. But anyway, so this draft is pretty interesting. There is no Chris Bryant. There is no Byron Buxton. There is no Steven Strasburg. There's no guy that everyone's clamoring to get number one, even clamoring to get 1, 2, or 3. This is a more shallow, particularly up at the top. I mean, there's no one guy that you really think is going to be, you know, a perennial all-star. There's going to be guys that come out of this draft that are going to be all-stars. They're going to be very, very good player. There could be somebody comes out as a Hall of Fame player. Don't think so. But there's no obvious, like, you got to have kind of player. To me, the best talent in the draft is Brendan Rodgers. It's the shortstop. Prep shortstop. I've never seen him play. Talked to a lot of people who have seen him play. He's a big, strong kid. And the good thing is when I'm here, and he has a chance to stay at shortstop long term, which, you know, you don't hear a lot. A lot of times you put your best athlete in high school, your best athlete in the Dominican League go to shortstop, and then they wind up somewhere else, usually at third base if they still stay in the dirt, or if they just don't have that athleticism, they move to the outfield. Brendan Rodgers has a chance to stay in the dirt, stay up the middle, which gives him a lot of long-term value. He's got an advanced hit tool, so I think you'll see a kid who might go through the minors very quickly. I would love to see the Astros draft this kid. And you go, well, gee, they've got Carlos Correa. Well, you draft for talent, particularly if you're drafting at the top of the board. You're drafting for talent because you have no idea what's going to happen to Carlos Correa. He might outgrow shortstop. You have no idea what's going to happen to Brendan Rodgers. So you always, in the first 2 or 3 rounds, you never draft for need. You draft the best talent. Even the Cubs should draft the best talent, even though they need pitching. If they draft the best talent like they did with Kyle Schwarber, who might become the best player in last year's draft, you know, you can always trade those guys, and they can bring a haul in. And again, controllable, young controllable players are extremely valuable in today's game. The guy who's probably going to go number one overall is Dansby Swanson. I have seen him. He's with Vanderbilt, another shortstop. The reason I think he's going to go, he's a little bit more polished, obviously. He's a college player. Dave Stewart from Arizona seems like he's leaning towards that. Does he have a higher upside than Brendan Rodgers? I don't think so. But that doesn't mean Dansby Swanson is not a really good player. He's got speed, 15 of 17 stolen bases this year. Definitely got pop, 14 home runs. There's a lot to like with him. The swing can get a little long. But in general, I think it's a safe pick, number one overall. If he goes to the Diamondbacks, which I think he will, from everything I'm hearing, I think he's up in 2017. So that's 2-year apprenticeship in the minor leagues, and then he's up. Doesn't have the kind of speed that Trey Turner has that was drafted by the Padres and now moved over to the Nats. But is that kind of polished college shortstop that you're looking for? Another polished college shortstop is Alex Bregman, who, I got to tell you, I've seen this kid play as well. And if you're looking for a Jose Altuve wannabe, it's this guy. I don't think he's a shortstop long term. 5'9", really athletic, makes really good contact, got very good bat speed. The carrying tool is his ability to hit and that speed. Guess how many stolen bases this year? 35. He's only 5'9", which again gives me a little bit of that Jose Altuve comp, though Jose Altuve is 5'4" or 5". I know he says he's 5'5". I'm not so sure. But I think he's, you know, it's the swing is a little bit built more for contact, if I recall. I looked at my notes. But I think he's got enough bat speed and enough strength to pop out 5'8", which is kind of what Jose Altuve usually will do in a season, maybe bump it up to 12 or so if he gets some carry with some of his balls. That's a really, really good player. And, yeah, I think legitimate number three, best player off the board from a fantasy standpoint. The next guy is a pitcher, and that is Dylan Tate out of UC Santa Barbara, right-handed pitcher. I've never seen him, only YouTube videos. Looks really polished to me. Good stuff. Fastball sits 94 to 95. He's got the very, very good slider. But it's funny, every time when you see these prep guys, the college guys that are throwing 96, 97 miles an hour, that always goes down a couple miles an hour. So I've gotten reports that he's hitting 96, 97 on the gun. I expect him, once he finally hits the professional baseball, 92 to 93, 94 kind of thing. There is good athleticism there. I think he'll move very quickly. And if you take a look at him, and he's 6'2", he reminds me a lot of Marcus Stroman. He's got that big athletic body. Marcus Stroman, though, is only 5'11", so Dylan Tate is 6'2". But I think he's got a very similar repertoire and a guy I think is going to move very, very quickly. Those who recall, I quickly forget, Marcus Stroman was going to be that ace in Toronto, and he blew out his Achilles heel and was lost for the season. Don't forget about Marcus Stroman next year in fantasy drafts. So stop this podcast, take out a pencil, write down Marcus Stroman, put it somewhere, because people will forget about him, and he will be somebody that you want. The last two guys I want to go over, I was going to do top five, but I did a top six. Is Daz Cameron is number five. Obviously, son of Mike Cameron, the former Major League Baseball player. All I heard starting in 2015, 2013, maybe 2012, he was being interviewed on MLB Network, and that's all people would talk about when the draft would come up. Wait until 2015. Daz Cameron, number one overall pick. Byron Buxton type of profile, plus speed. Ability to hit, polished game, but it's come together, but it's not come together like everybody thought it was going to come together. You love the bloodline, so you can never put that past it. But there's plus speed there for sure, but I think there's a lot of questions on how much he's going to hit, how much power he's going to have. Will he ever become his father? If you take a look at his father in his early mid-20s, his father was a really good player, really good fantasy player. I think there's a lot of question whether he's ever going to hit that upside. But clearly from a fantasy standpoint, you know, there's definitely quality here. So he might go 7, 8, 9. He might not even sign. He might go to Florida State because that's where he's committed to. If he doesn't get the kind of money that he thinks he does. And again, you can do that when your dad made, I don't know how much he made, but my guess is a lot of money. The dad can go, look, man, you're set for life anyway. Go to college, get an education, come back and let's see if we can make you more money. If not, then take the money and we'll go from there. That is, you know, when you have things set for you at a young age, it does make things decisions a lot easier. So we'll see what eventually happens to Daz Cameron. The last guy is somebody who I've seen recently, and that's Andrew Benintendi, and Benintendi. He's an outfielder with Arkansas. This guy can flat out play. And if there's one guy who might be better than anybody else in this draft, it's going to be this cat. He's got five, he's one of the few guys that actually has truly five tools. So he's a sophomore in Arkansas, tremendously athletic, plus speed. I think he has a chance to easily steal 30 bases at the major league level. He can really run it down in center field. I saw him make two diving catches that were not because he was bad routes, but really good routes, and just laid out and picked these things up. It was pretty impressive. 5'10", which is, you know, not huge, so you do wonder about how much power he eventually has, but my buddy Manny Margot's got some serious little pop there too. So I could see a guy with, you know, 12 to 15 home runs, so that's average home run power. But he's really showing that he can flat out hit. And he's only had 100 at-bats this year, but I do think it's a guy that we need to, as fantasy watchers, need to keep our eye on, because this guy could be somebody that you want to jump on in next year's redrafts of your dynasty leagues, because I think he's going to be very good. And I know for a fact the Chicago Cubs and the Boston Red Sox are licking their chops over this guy. And he's one of those guys that you don't want to take in the top five or six picks, just because there's probably more quote-unquote legitimate talent in the field, and nobody was really on this guy. He's only a sophomore. Apparently he was draft eligible as a sophomore, so I'm not exactly sure what happened there. But the Red Sox pick 7, the Cubs pick 9. I've been told he's not going to get past those two guys. And I've been told that by people in those organizations. So if he's on the board, they're going to take him unless somebody starts dropping, like a Bregman or somebody like that. So anyway, the draft is always one of my favorite days because I love the kids, obviously. But, you know, you got to watch it. You got to get into it because those are the future stars of tomorrow. And, you know, I think it's good to kind of see those guys and see them introduced. And you'll get a snippet of all of those guys, particularly on the first night. So the first round gets picked on the first night, and then the supplemental round, and then the second round. So the more pageantry is around the first and supplemental round. So that'll be about 40 players taken, and encourage you all to watch it. It's not nearly as exciting as the NFL draft is, but they're doing better. They're trying to make it more exciting and telling stories about all the players there. I hope you've enjoyed the podcast. Think of this as a reverse podcast. Sunday night is boring rich and talking about prospects and kids and trying to hopefully help you with your major league teams as well. And then Timmy and I will be more of a classic traditional show on Thursday. And then, of course, next Sunday we're back full force. We'll do a really long show and cover a lot of good stuff. Thank you all for visiting my site. Thank you all for all the support you give us on our show and everything that you do. It's so much appreciated. Timmy and I do this out of sheer love for the game and trying to pass along content that we've been able to learn and gather as we go through this baseball world. And I'm just glad we're able to share that with you. Talk to you guys soon. Oh, by the way, hopefully tomorrow before I head off on my flight, I'm going to try to do, somebody said, gee, Rich, do a Periscope broadcast of you blowing the air horn. People want to hear my air horn being blown. So I'll try to do it before I leave on my flight. If not, I'll definitely do it when I get back. It's a blast. Talk to you guys soon.